Welcome to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders, hosted by Mike Tsakopoulos and produced by the American Association for Physician Leadership.
We have all experienced coaches. Some were awful, like my high school football coach. Thick as two short planks and borderline abusive, he was useless. On the other end of the spectrum was Reed Buckley. Decades later, I can hear his voice in my head, working to bring the best out of me. What makes a good coach? How do coaches and mentors differ? Which offer the best route to achieving our goals? Today, we explore executive coaching. Next on Sound Practice. My guest today is Vivek Iyer. Vivek has a deep experience in the fields of strategic planning and process improvement. He's worked for PricewaterhouseCoopers, Ernst Young, and AC Nielsen. Vivek has become internationally recognized executive coach and is the principal of Swanvesha Executive Coaching. Apologies if I mispronounced that, Vivek. Vivek Iyer, welcome to Sound Practice.
Thank you so much, Mike. It's quite an honor. Thank you.
Well, the honor is ours to have you today. I did the shortest of introductions, but I am sure that our audience would like to know more about your background. Could you tell us a little bit?
Sure. Thank you. So I got into coaching literally after COVID. So I was let go and I had to reinvent myself. And that's when coaching emerged as a very natural extension of my corporate career. In that life, I was privy to senior leadership discussions and used to act as a sounding board and thought partner for them. And the other thing I always used to do is like always try and help colleagues at work, be it with management related things or even otherwise. And that's something that I always loved doing even as a child. And I really get a huge kick out of it. Like I'm really happy when, you know, I'm able to help somebody move ahead in their life or even bring a positive impact in them. So once I decided to become a coach, I got trained in executive coaching and then certified by the International Coaching Federation. I was also able to make use of my experience of having lived in four countries. I speak six languages, understand a couple more. And all of this has given me a broad perspective of leadership, organizational challenges. And today I just help leaders basically cut through the complexity that they have in their brains or mind, sorry. And and they just help them find what they're looking for.
Very interesting. I'm wildly impressed that you speak six languages. Very, very envious. But let's get to specifically what is coaching. And I know that that's kind of at a certain level, a silly question, but maybe you could delve into the particularities of coaching.
Sure. So there are a lot of definitions for coaching, but I always like the simpler version. Like, let's take an example, right? So anybody who wants to work on fitness or weight loss, or, you know, like you can always go to a gym, take a membership and work on the equipment. But when you hire a physical trainer, the results are always better. It's not that the trainer does the job for you, but they work on building a plan, like designing a plan for you, encourage you when you are implementing it, and help you stay accountable. This is what a coach does too. The coach does not do the work of solving a problem or, you know, like helping you achieve a goal directly, but they create the space for you to feel comfortable and then, you know, go through your thoughts and find out your own answers. That's what a coach does. I also wanted to add a subtle distinction because a lot of people actually get confused between coaching, mentoring, consulting, and therapy. So mentoring is about guiding the client with the mentor's own experiences. That's what mentoring is. But consulting is about providing solutions that they already have. And therapy is about healing wounds. But coaching is different. Coaching is about helping you get your own answers. And a coach's role is to act as a catalyst for the clients to find their own answers and achieve their goals.
That's very helpful. Nice distinctions, because I think you're right. People oftentimes confuse one category for another. So help me with the specifics. How does coaching work?
Right. So we can break down coaching engagement into three parts. The first is discovery, second design, and then finally implementation. And I'll explain this again with an example. So suppose someone wants to work on their leadership presence. Now, the discovery phase will be about defining what is leadership presence according to the client. It might involve a few assessments like a personality assessment or a 360-degree feedback or those. But more importantly, the reason why discovery phase is very crucial is like everyone's definition of these things are different. So your definition of leadership presence could be different from what mine is and so on. But the important thing here is that the client's definition and what they want as leadership present is most crucial. So the discovery phase is completely about finding out what the client wants. Once that is done, then we get to the design phase where I work with the client to find out what is the best thing that they want to work on. So for example, sometimes when we do assessments, you get to find out a little bit about the client's strengths or values that they really are good at. So maybe the client wants to emphasize and enhance those in their leadership presence. Or sometimes you find that there are a few areas where the client thinks they need to work on. So we work on that. So that's where the design phase comes, where you work on how do you want to improve your strength or work on your things that you want to work upon. Then finally, the implementation stage is where you start implementing these plans in real life. That's where the client needs a lot of encouragement. Like, you know, they're trying out something new. So there'll be a lot of times they might fail, but then you need to constantly encourage them to go ahead and be confident that they're trying something new. And over a period of time, they find that what they're looking for. So that's how broadly the coaching engagement ends. Typically, a coaching engagement is anywhere between 6 to 9 months. And what I also do is after this kind of implementation phase is done, and in some ways the coaching engagement is also completed, I always try and keep in touch with the client in a 3 or 6 month period just to check on if, you know, they are doing right or if they are going back to their old habits. That sort of gives me a holistic view about how the client is progressing.
How often do you find that clients start with you in the discovery phase and really don't have a crystallized idea of what they're after?
This works many times. So I'll tell you an example again. So, you know, when we meet somebody for the first time, we always are guarded. So, I mean, in a simple way, there are defense mechanisms. Everybody has, you know, some or the other way you talk to somebody. There are social norms and stuff. The coach's job is to go past all of that so that you're able to connect with the client meaningfully. And that is a very crucial part of the discovery phase, where it takes a few sessions, often 3, 4, sometimes even 5 sessions, to finally the client being comfortable with you and opening up about what they really mean.
So what are the key things required to be a coach?
So the 4 key things that I think are important or required to being a good coach are curiosity, genuine empathy, objectivity, and good listening skills. Now, these are, like, in many ways quite straightforward, right? But the difficulty is that, you know, to be genuinely curious about what the client is saying or person in front of you saying and listening, it's difficult. You need to practice on that. Otherwise, your mind's always running around and, you know, like trying to decipher what they're saying. It's how we all process things. The second is empathy. You need to genuinely feel that you are trying to help the client stay positive or push and, you know, those kind of things. Otherwise, people just make out. If you're not honest about it, you just know by instinct that, you know, that this is fake. That doesn't help. Third is objectivity. And there are a lot of good books written on it, because if it's like, you know, the kryptonite for any coach is objectivity, because everybody wants to give out the suggestions or, like, you know, or you think that this is the best for you and you should do this. Those things keep on creeping up. You need to be very careful that you don't do any of that when you're coaching. So you also need to constantly look at yourself as a coach, that you're not falling to this trap. The last is listening skills. If you listen well, I think if you ask me the most important amount of all 4, I think it's good listening skills. Because when you're really listening to somebody, it does something magical. People genuinely feel that they can open up and talk and, you know, share. And it just works out. They just find out what they're looking for. It's very easy that way. So those are the four things. I always, and I wanted to add this, it's a bit of a funny thing, but it's important. So, you know, when at the beginning of any engagement, or as a matter of fact, in every session, we start, any coach would start saying that this is a safe space and, you know, whatever you say is confidential and all that. So I learned to add three lines, which is in a way funny, but it's also very true. One is that whatever you say stays with me unless you do three things. One is that you say something that you're going to harm yourself. Two, if you say something that you're going to harm somebody else. Or three, if I have to defend myself in a court of law, because this vocation is not covered by attorney-client privilege. So that's the three things we keep on saying.
Well, it occurs to me, we'd had an opportunity to meet once before, and I remember my father trying to give me some advice. I don't think it rose to the level of coaching, Vivek. But when he told me that I was, spoke to him about doing this podcast, and he was older and didn't really understand podcasts, but he knew a lot about human nature and how to ask questions. And he, in no uncertain terms, told me, "No one wants to hear from you. It's all about the guest. Ask a good question and get out of their way." And you know what? It's pieces of wisdom like that have helped me. And I imagine that you have some of those type of examples in your repertoire as well.
You know, your dad was really wise and used the right word, wisdom. It is indeed wisdom. Because in coaching, what we try to do is to speak as little as possible. I mean, I know there are some coaches who speak like less than 20% of the time if you're talking for an hour or something. That's a true hallmark of a coach. You want the client to feel comfortable and explore their ideas. Otherwise, the more you speak and if you keep on constantly asking questions, you are sort of not allowing the client to like process and figure out what they want to do. So yeah, absolutely right.
Can anybody be coached? Are there certain people that are more receptive to it, or some people that just maybe it's ineffective?
So in theory, anyone can be coached, but timing and fitment matters. So the desire to be coached has to come from within, right? I mean, you cannot force it on somebody else. So that's the first part. The second is that sometimes the coach's style or the personalities don't match with the client. And at such times, the coach has to be honest enough to acknowledge that and then refer the client to somebody else who might be better fit for the client. But to your point, yes, anyone can be coached, but it's when you really feel like you need help and you need engage with the coach to find what you're looking for.
It sounds like the need for coaching really needs to come from within the client. Is that fair?
Yes, that is true.
Tell me a little bit. I was curious about the name of your firm. Can you tell me the origin story of that?
Right. So my company's name is Svanvesha. It's Sanskrit, and it has two parts to it, Sva and Anvesha. It literally means self-enquiry. So the core philosophy of coaching is that to improve yourself or solve a problem, you first need to look inward for solutions. So, for example, let's take an industry, say healthcare, and there are many challenges working in the industry. So as a physician leader, you are under so much stress and workload and things you cannot influence. While you cannot control everything, you can always control how you approach these things. By improving your actions, thoughts, and intent, you're better equipped to face challenges and reach solutions. And this is also reflected in all coaching questions that we ask. So questions like, what are your ideas? How can you make this work? What's within your control? And those kinds are open-ended questions. So the name of my company is essentially symbolic of this looking inward. And so Svanvesha.
Very nice. Vivek, as you know, this is the podcast of the American Association for Physician Leadership. So we have a number of physicians and executive healthcare folks listening to us today. When you are coaching people from this category, what are some of the common problems you find that they're experiencing that you have to overcome as their coach?
I think the key challenges for physician leaders, and this is also true for industries like investment banking or high tech or big consulting companies where I have worked a little, is that there are primarily three parts. The first is self-doubt or, you know, imposter syndrome. Mm. The second is overwhelm. And the third is, I like to call it intellectual hubris, or like there are people who think they know everything. So that comes in at times. So those are the three major things that I think are key challenges for people in this physician leaders and broadly any of these larger industries.
So do you have a story maybe to illustrate that a little bit more for me?
Sure. So before this story, I'll explain a little bit about the three, like what I mean when I said or Please. How it impacts the industry. So imposter syndrome is surprisingly lurking everywhere. And this was a big surprise to me when I started working more and more like with senior folks, is that despite their achievements, and many of these people have a fear that, you know, they are not good enough or they're missing something. And it sort of, you know, creeps up in a lot of places where you least unexpected. So that's very common. The second one, overwhelm, is a direct outcome of how we work now. There is just too much of data for everyone to process. There's just too many actions to be made. And nobody has time to basically step back and talk what's in their heart and mind. And this is also true for senior leaders because they don't find people who are confident enough for them to just open up and talk like a sounding board. So that's the second part. For the third one, the intellectual hubris, this is where I have a story. This is a Zen story about a professor of philosophy who once visited a Zen master and said, I know everything about Zen, but I just wanted to hear what are your views. So the master did not answer him directly, just offered him some tea. And the master started pouring tea in the teacup and soon it started overflowing and fell on the floor and all. The professor just stood up and was like, stop, what are you doing? The cup is full, right? No more will go. The master just smiled and replied, this is exactly how your mind is. Like your mind is like this cup. It's full of your own knowledge and assumptions and ideas. How can I teach you anything unless you first empty your cup? So it's a very famous story. But it's the kind of rigidity that comes over time, right? We all have done that and we just need to be smart enough about being flexible when required.
I like that story.
Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit more specifically about what services you offer and how you can help someone who may be listening today.
So for individual coaches, I offer leadership presence, leadership development, behavioral coaching, overwhelm, and transitioning into new roles. For organizations, I like strategic planning. That space is something that I always liked. And I use facilitation to work on that. So for organizations too, when you work, it's similar to individual coaching. The process broadly is the same. We start with the brainstorming or the discovery part. Then we finalize core ideas or areas to focus on, then create action plan, and finally move into implementation. In this space where you're working with organizations, implementation is actually more important in that sense because the best plans or strategy that is created, they often fail because implementation is not good. So those are the two areas that I work on.
I'm interested. Is the length of the coaching cycle different for individuals than organizations, or do they take roughly the same amount of time?
It can vary. So again, there's no benchmark on these things. So I'll give an example of this strategic planning thing, right? So I like to do it in a way that you get, I break it into two parts. One is I work with the core team, like the senior leadership and people who are important to work on the broad strategy at one hand. Then I also do a separate one with the people who are on the implementation phase. So let's take an example. Let's say there's a board and top management. But then there are all of these vice presidents who will be on the implementation phase. So I do the same kind of brainstorming, creating plan with both of them. Surprisingly, what happens is that the overlaps are almost 90% right, like the way they approach the whole thing. So that takes the first part of this whole creating the strategy part. It usually can be a couple of days of retreat or something that you work, or maybe 3-day retreat with them. But what it does is that the vice presidents who are involved in strategy planning automatically have a buy-in into the whole process, because they are also part of strategy creation in that sense. So when you then go into the second phase of, you know, like creating this action plan, and then all of them also have like measurable goals, right? You know, it's all tangible goals. So all of that is also co-created. And then finally, when the implementation happens, the buy-in from the vice presidents are significantly more, because in a way it's their own strategy, right? But that implementation can take anywhere between 6 months to 9 months or even more, depending on whether it's a 5-year strategy, 3-year strategy, and those kind of things. So that's broadly how it goes.
Oh, that's helpful to understand.
Thank you.
Our time's running to a close, but I'm very interested in what's next from you. You're always doing such interesting things. And so what can we expect from you in the future?
So besides my current work, I one of the things I also do is like I go for speaking engagements on leadership and such. I'm also, I found the joy of like, you know, writing in this last year and a half or so. I mean, I really like the way I'm expressing my ideas and stuff, and my newsletters are quite well received. And finally, I got the courage to start putting some of these ideas into a book about decision making. I'm taking the first steps. I'm quite nervous and excited. Like, it's one of those things, right? And that's the one that I'm really excited about for next year.
Well, excellent. Well, we will look forward to a forthcoming book from you. But in the meantime, if people would like to reach out to you and learn more about coaching or potentially work with you, how best can they find you?
So one of the things about having this kind of a unique name is that when you search on any search engines, it'll directly take you to my website. So that's the first. So you can always find me on my website. I'm quite active on LinkedIn. So those are two places you can always reach out to me. And yeah, I mean, I'm usually very prompt in responding. So you'll find that I'm good at that part too. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, and we will also provide contact information for you in the show notes to this episode. So if someone's driving, don't take your eyes off the road. The information will be available. Well, Vivek Iyer, thank you so much for being on Sound Practice and for taking your time today. This has been very informative. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much for having me. It's, as I said at the beginning, it's a big honor, and thank you so much.
My thanks to Vivek Iyer for his time and insights. His thoughtful approach to coaching has benefited countless individuals. My thanks also to the American Association for Physician Leadership for making this podcast possible. Please join me next time on Sound Practice. We release a new episode every other Wednesday.
You've been listening to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders. Check out the show notes for this episode at soundpractice.com. If you have any suggestions for future episodes, we'd love to hear them. Email us at info@soundpractice.com. Subscribe to Sound Practice wherever you listen to podcasts so you can automatically receive our episodes. And please rate us and comment on the podcast in iTunes and Google Play. Sound Practice is presented and produced by the team at American Association for Physician Leadership. We are the world's premier organization for all aspects of physician leadership in every sector of healthcare. Learn more at physicianleaders.org. That man Robin, Whitman Kapow.